Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Shoot kick.
Shoot, kick.
I don't know what else to say. You know, we do a countdown, and you usually say something funny right before. That usually ends up popping me as we begin the show, but you said shoot kick this time, and you know what? I think shoot kick is all that needs to be said because they have finally shot kicked some excitement for New Japan and Noah into my life. One fell swoop from Kaito Kiyomiya right into Kazuchika Okada's face has brought all of the love into my heart again.
100% agree. There's so many things that we could talk about as far as news in wrestling over the past weekend in Japan, and we will because most of it I'm very, very excited about. But I don't think anyone who listens to this show would expect us to start off with any Japanese wrestling news other than the biggest headline maker coming out of this very newsworthy past weekend, the New Japan versus Pro Wrestling Noah show, which ostensibly going in, the big story was LIJ versus Kongo, who's going to win? How will the politics play out as far as which guys get wins, who doesn't, who wins the whole thing? But instead, as you mentioned, Kaito Kiyomiya kicked Kazuchika Okada directly in the face, and the pro wrestling world was abuzz. I did not watch this show live. I watched it right when I got up in the morning. Was watching it, just going through like, hey, this is a cool show. It's fun. There's cheering this time for New Japan versus Noah in Yokohama Arena. I wonder how the crowd is. It looks pretty good. Maybe it's as good as last year. Maybe it isn't. We get through the undercard. We get to that tag match, Okada and Makabe versus Kiyomiya and Inamura. It's listed as a no contest in 6 minutes and 35 seconds. I would have to go back and get the stopwatch, Mike, but I think probably 5 minutes of that was the aftermath of the, I don't know if you can call it a shoot kick, the worked shoot kick of Kaito Kiyomiya to the forehead of Okada. All hell broke loose.
Yeah, I guess we should be careful for historical purposes to not actually call it a shoot kick as if it was Akira Maeda, but that's what they wanted you to feel, that this champion of New Japan, this guy that thinks he's bigger than everybody else, at least on this stage, we get a humble New Japan first Okada. Yeah, he speaks his mind and he says some things at press conference that New Japan doesn't like, but damn it, he's a New Japan guy and he's the number one guy in the number one promotion, and that's that. And then he's in there with Kaito Kiyomiya and he doesn't really sell anything that he's talking about before the show. And in the ring, he doesn't even want to start out and face him. And Kiyomiya is upset by that and insulted by that. And then there's Okada, who's got a rear chin lock that's locked into Yoshiki Inamura. And in comes Kiyomiya to lay a couple of boots into Okada, to break it up, to rankle him a little bit. But Okada doesn't sell it. He doesn't sell the first one, doesn't sell the second one. Not sure exactly how many there were, but it got to be about the fourth one. And then, well, Kiyomiya just kind of threw his hands up and Okada, who's making faces the entire time, not looking at him, then looks up to eat a kick right into the eye. And he goes ass over tea kettle backwards. The crowd gasped. And just like that, you have a hot Noah versus New Japan feud. You have a hot Kiyomiya. And I think on this show, I had talked about the fact that Shingo has got a title shot coming up against Okada, and the fact that Nakajima is a person that, to be honest, I thought would be perfect for this, to give some drama into Okada's life. But with the way that this whole thing worked itself out, I thought it worked out even better because Kiyomiya is the number one guy in that promotion. And one thing we have talked about for months and months and months on end when it comes to these two promotions is they have got to break out of the ruts that they were in. Nosawa's booking, all of the old guys, all of that sort of stuff. Their new guard is not breaking out for any attention that was supposed to be brought to Noah by these big names. Are they better off for it than they were before? I question that, but you know what? They're in a much better position now. and New Japan, that has been dying at their own hand booking wise for God knows how long, has needed something to create excitement, something that's not Bullet Club, something that's bigger than the company, something that's actually bigger than its champion. And they got that. They got an interpromotional feud. And you know what? I don't know how much of this is just sheerly out of necessity, but you know what? It is necessary that these two promotions do this with each other, no matter how much they really want to work with each other or not, or how much certain guys want to work with each other or not.
Yeah, it's been years, literal years, that we've been talking on this podcast about the thing that's been missing. And this is pre-pandemic, you know, like I tweeted about how excited I was about this and how, you know, just how new this felt. And several people responded and said, yeah, you know, it feels like this is Japan is a wrestling scene, realizing they're coming out of the pandemic and getting back to how things were before. This goes back much further than that. Even pre-pandemic, the isolationist stance that Gato's New Japan had largely taken over the past decade. And, you know, you had guys here or there do a G1 run. And even that ended for, it felt like, a good 3 or 4 years. But by and large, it was just New Japan. It was its own thing. It really wasn't acknowledging the rest of the wrestling scene in Japan. And that led to things starting to feel very stale. And then obviously when the pandemic hit and you couldn't bring in foreigners, you couldn't really cycle people in and out, it only exacerbated that. Just going back to particularly the Kiyomiya and Okada situation, you laid out perfectly what happened here on this show. It goes back so much further than that, though, as far as them laying the seeds for this story, whether it be last year in Yokohama Arena, the first of these, you know, obviously not the first time New Japan and Noah were on cards against each other, but the first of these New Japan versus Noah shows, you had Okada completely dismiss Kiyomiya. And you go back even before that, in the early days of the pandemic, when Noah was doing those weird shows in that tiny, tiny, tiny shoebox of a TV studio, and Kiyomiya, out of nowhere, did the Rainmaker pose and called out Okada, and then that made, I believe, the front page, the front cover of Weekly Pro. This was, I want to say, like spring or summer of 2020, like the really early days of the pandemic, and Okada completely no-sold that as well. So they've built up this whole idea of Okada being bigger than everything, knowing he's bigger than everything, and Kiyomiya on his rise up, not only in his promotion, but in the scene in Japan, wanting to stake claim for himself as a top guy. And I think part of what made this work so well, you brought up the idea of if Katsuhiko Nakajima had been in this spot and if they did this with Nakajima, in some ways you could say it, maybe there's a strong argument to be made, it would have worked better in that Nakajima has the earned reputation at this point of being a dangerous guy. But part of what worked so well for me with this, with Kiyomiya, is if you're going to put a list of guys that you expect to do in storyline a shoot kick to someone's face, Kiyomiya is not even on the page. He's somewhere way, way back in that book. And so the shock of him seeing do that here, and then the flip side of that, Kazuchika Okada, who is such a calm, composed figure, really never gets overly fired up, even in these long-term feuds with guys like Jay White. Here, everything you mentioned happens. Okada, you know, kind of checks his forehead, and he can already feel that hematoma forming. He's already bleeding a little bit. He runs and knocks Kiyomiya off the apron, which at that point just looks like regular wrestling stuff. And then as Kiyomiya's on the floor, Okada just starts laying into him hard kicks that look legit to the ribs, you know, just clubbing blows. He's whipping him around. He's aggressively throwing him onto the announce table in a way that doesn't look very cooperative. And so, like, for guys like you and I who are very familiar with this sort of thing and have called for this type of worked, uncooperative stuff to come back in Japan, like, we knew what this was right away. But if you looked on Twitter, there were a lot of people that, as this footage made its way around pretty quickly, people legitimately bought this as real and were immediately hyped up to see these guys wrestle each other. And to me, Mike, it just shows, we've talked about it for decades on this podcast, how easy pro wrestling is when you just do pro wrestling and things that work and you don't overcomplicate things.
Yeah, Big Boss Man Brian Alvarez tried to give an explanation on why he liked this so much and tried to tie it in with New Japan's boring booking and this, and it's like, boss, they just went back to basics and they took an old school thing that has not been done over and over again. Because that's one thing that hasn't been done in New Japan with referee interference and this and that and the third. We have not had a nasty pull apart, real feelings type of brawl, certainly not interpromotional, that we got here. And that's exactly what it was. And it helps both companies. And I think both companies saw that last year. They're better off with each other, being tense rivals and being in the game with each other. It's better for the entirety of Japanese wrestling. And that's the other thing that Cyber Agent really needs to take into account. Obviously, Bushiroad and Stardom and New Japan, it's a little bit of a different situation. But over there with Cyber Agent, you have DDT, you have Tokyo Joshi Pro, you have what's the
GAN
other one?
Pro.
Yeah, GAN Pro. So it's like, you have those other things that you need to support and hype up, and if the business overall is better, if there's more interest behind it, then, you know, good. You know, at the end of the day, neither one of these shows is in prime time, you know, on Japanese television. You know, Japanese wrestling is much like American wrestling. It is a niche right now, and it needs to grow. And this was, to me, the best thing they could have done to really rally some support behind everything. And kudos to everybody involved. Kenno and Kongo's run in at the press conference that was not taped. I mean, it was taped, obviously, but was not shown live. Just the fact that we knew something was going on, which also now opens the door if they want to actually have a shot during the show backstage, you know, instead of waiting until afterwards or waiting to YouTube to post those things up, that they actually go backstage, because now there's a precedent that's set. Kongo showed up and challenged LIJ last year, so they may actually do that live during the show now. They may build in something like that. So it'll be interesting to see going forward. And obviously, you know, February 21st is the next shot we're going to have to see everything, and we'll see what happens from there this year. But I tell you what, with all of the names and all the AEW people and this and that, look, Ospreay and Omega are going to be tied up for a while. It does not look like Ibushi is coming back. We'll see if he resigns or not, but, you know, that's a questionable thing. So with that stuff going on kind of over to the side, again, we got Fantastica Mania coming up. So when it comes for the rest of New Japan, like what's going on with Okada, you know, this swirling around and this continuing to swirl like into April, you know, that's not going to hurt my feelings at all. I hope that's not just everything just doesn't end here on the 21st.
Yeah, I hope not. And I tend to think it won't. You know, you look at last year's New Japan versus Noah Wrestle Kingdom show, and it was completely self-contained. They did that show and then nothing happened with it for a year. Whereas here they did this and all of a sudden we're seeing a bunch of offshoots from that. So you get the sense, you know, that this is going to continue on. If no other reason, then, and we talked about this a little bit off air right before we started recording, kind of the unsaid thing here, and maybe some people disagree with this, but when you look at reasons why these two companies would be working together when they're different corporations, they're rivals. In some ways, you look at Jake Lee, they're competing for the same wrestlers when they hit the free agent market. But you have an entity called ABEMA who runs these pay-per-views. The last New Japan versus Noah show was on ABEMA pay-per-view. This one was as well. So will the Keiji Muto retirement show coming up. These things are on that platform. And you look at who that platform is owned by. It's owned by Cyber Agent primarily. There's also an ownership stake for TV Asahi. Cyber Agent, as we just talked about, owners of CyberFight, which is the parent company that all the promotions you mentioned, you know, DDT, NOAH, TJPW, Gambare Pro, they're all under that heading. Also, though, you have, I believe it's a Well, you've got TBSI, as I said, they have a stake in ABEMA, and they also still have a 10% stake in New Japan. And while, yes, that is only a 10% stake and Bushiroad is the primary owner, anyone who tries to post GIFs of New Japan stuff on Twitter will tell you TV Asahi is a very active 10% owner of New Japan Pro Wrestling and is, you know, the legacy owner in some ways of the company. And so it, to me, you look at it, it's a situation where maybe if you didn't have those corporate tie-ups together on one end, kind of off in the distance, these companies wouldn't work together. But when you have an entity that has, you know, there's ownership stakes sort of overarching tied into that one entity that clearly wants to and can make money off of having New Japan and Noah working together and doing these shows, that seems to me to be enough to get these companies to work together. So that is an interesting wrinkle. The other thing that I wanted to talk about just about this with you in particular, Mike, because we've been doing this podcast for a long time. You've been talking about Japan on digital radio even longer than I have, going back to when you were on the PPH before I joined that show. The idea that somehow New Japan working with Noah and this being a hot thing is somehow an indictment of New Japan as a whole. I've seen some people say that. To me, that's a weird take, because if you go back and look at, you know, the New Japan versus UWF, or you look at, you know, when Choshu left and took a bunch of guys to All Japan and kind of formed that faux company and then came back to New Japan after leaving All Japan, those are just a couple examples of, you know, promotion versus promotion or kind of invasion or fake invasion angles. The history of Japanese wrestling is littered with those being things that really pumped business in a big way. So to me, I don't see this as being like an indictment of New Japan not being able to do X, Y, and Z on their own, or Noah not being able to do X, Y, and Z on their own. To me, when Japanese wrestling is at its best and is at its most profitable and successful is when things like this are happening.
Well, it's tension, you know, it, of course, you know, you got something hot, whether it's inside your own house or whether it's interpromotional. If you've got something, you've got something. And that type of stuff is easy to resonate with people. And when it strikes them at the right time, like this obviously has, then it works, you know, with New Japan and UWFI. There's been plenty of examples. And no, they can't do this without each other. That is true. And
it's,
yes,
the point.
They did. Yeah, they did need each other to do this, but it depends on your perspective, because if you're a much more recent fan, and you gotta think, you know, somebody that's been now a fan for 15 years, you know, that's only putting them back at 07. So, you know, if they're looking at this and they've grown up with pretty much just the Ghetto run and seeing what he's done, and they are tired and just see the stagnance and see how gray and how blah everything has been, yeah, they may look at this and their first knee-jerk reaction is, yeah, well, good. Yeah, they needed Noah to do something like this. You know, whatever their perspective is, in the long run, you know, I think, look, they could not have gotten their years off to a better start. This is a great first step. I'm not going to criticize anything because I have nothing to criticize. And even if I did, you know, to me, nobody should pick nits about this right now. They should let and see how it goes, because we'll see how the year builds. We'll see how exciting Okada's reign has been. We'll see how they rebuild Jay White. We'll see how they make the junior heavyweight something different, because Hiromu, if he is going to be Lifetime, he is going to be Liger of that division. Okay, well, what do we do now to make something different and something special happen here so it's not just a stagnant thing? Same thing over on Noah's side. Okay, what can they do now with Kiyomiya to take whatever he gets out of that match on the 21st? What can he now do? Because one problem Noah has is, with the exception of Jake Lee, who's new in there, we've seen pretty much every combination of everybody in a short period of time. Now, okay, again, how can you make that fresh? What are you going to do to make things happen there? So, to me, this is a first step, and I can't complain about anything. I'm not going to throw shade on him. I think if people are going to throw digs at him, hell, you know what? Their booking has caused that to happen. So if people are going to get their shots in, I kind of don't blame them for doing it. But anybody that gets too emotional about this, I think would be silly about it.
Well, yeah, I think with this particularly, this Okada Kiyomiya situation, what we're building to, you know, you hear the whole thing of like, oh, let it play out, you know, sort of as a meme, as a joke. And a lot of times it's right to make fun of that statement because let it play out is preceded by something really dumb being done by a company of, with a track record of doing things really dumb. This was picture perfect, pitch perfect, however you want to say it. And it's leading to something that everyone wants to see. So let's see how it plays out. The other element of this that I really want to talk, I was hoping we would talk about on the show, because again, it's something that you really harp on. And it's just something I find really interesting as well. And it's such a different thing in Japan over the years, over the decades, compared to what you see in American wrestling, is that this is another scenario where we laid out some of the reasons why this might be happening behind the scenes, but New Japan has been the industry leader for a long time now, a long time. It's been a long time since Pro Wrestling Noah has been remotely competitive. And New Japan, much like you've talked about in the early 2000s, when they could have just put their foot on the neck of All Japan Pro Wrestling and put them out of their misery, here, New Japan is working with Pro Wrestling Noah and, you know, in some ways, raising their level up as a result, you know. And I was just interested to see what you thought of that sort of, you know, nothing's new. You stick around long enough, you'll see everything again. And here we are seeing the same thing play out, albeit in a little bit different way.
Well, the business has always been different over there. Look at how, you know, one-off produced shows are. And, you know, things are just, it's... You see it with the Hall of Fame that everybody's involved in. It's just a little different. And I think, again, I don't know all of the reasons behind it, but you're much better off having an opponent to spar with than none, you know, than to have to punch down at them, especially when things aren't going well for you. You know what I mean? So, you know, right now everybody kind of needs everybody, especially because the floodgates of foreigners have not opened back up yet for New Japan. You know, they have for Noah, they have for other places. You know, we saw it on this show with, you know, Jack Morris. Well, obviously he's
kinda, GLG. He's looking guy.
He's living over there. But, you know, Dante Leon and Ninja Mac and Anthony Green and Timothy Thatcher, and they're much more reliant on outside guys, but we haven't seen that, you know, with New Japan yet. And we are going to see that slowly happen. We're going to see it with Fantastica Mania in a way. We're going to see it with the junior heavyweights when they come in for their tour. But, you know, for right now, you know, they are better off working with each other. They are better off, you know, supporting each other. That does not mean that you have to help their business at every opportunity, but when you have a mutually beneficial relationship, who else can New Japan put in that position to do a Wrestle Kingdom 17-2 show twice? You know, they got out of being able to run the Tokyo Dome, you know, back-to-back because of the pandemic and because of their weak-ass booking, so they've had to work with somebody over the last 2 years. Who else is it going to be? You know, Dragon Gate, you know, doesn't really fit that bill. You know, Noah is the best company to be working with to do shows like this. So, you know they need them right now. They do. You know, again, what else could have generated the interest as to, you know, anything with that company and vice versa with Noah than what took place? You know, because the bottom line for Noah, even if he gets pinned clean as a sheet, and I don't think that'll happen with Kiyomiya on the 21st, you know, the bottom line is he's mixing it up with Okada. That's good for publicity. It's good for everybody involved. Sure, Shingo beat Nakajima, but Shingo's going to go on to an IWGP title shot, and it's Nakajima. Doesn't hurt him at all. You know, Manabu Soya got to beat his old partner. You know, Hiromu Takahashi got the win, but my God, he's the biggest junior heavyweight star in years. So, you know, from there, Tadasuke got the victory. You had the all these things that took place. Again, Noah came out of it strong, too. So, again, it's the best thing for everybody involved, I think, right now, because, again, New Japan doesn't have to work with DDT. They don't have to do anything with Tokyo Joshi Pro. All they have to do is work with Noah. But by extension, Noah doing that should, in my feeling, should probably help by extension DDT and TJP.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, you mentioned, you know, with New Japan working with Noah and you know, not working with Tokyo Joshi Pro. I mean, that would be kind of a weird fit not working with DDT. Beyond that, they're also only working with the guys in Noah that they want to work with. Like, there was no sign of you know, Hideki Suzuki or Timothy Thatcher or Kaz Fujita or Masakatsu Funaki or any of those type of guys on this show on the 21st. So it was very clear kind of who they're looking to work with, who they're not looking to work with. I don't know, just when I see, you know, Kiyomiya and Okada, and obviously the story is different, the roles are different, but when I see this and think about how it's going to play out, it just reminds me of, in a weird way, what we saw with Kensuke Sasaki and Toshiaki Kawada at, you know, at the Dome and leading into the Dome, you know, somewhat 23 years ago now, 22, 23 years ago. So it's just, it's still, to me, it's just crazy how you stick around long enough. What's old will seem new again. You know, and I guess for new fans of Japanese wrestling or newer fans of Japanese wrestling, I guess what I would say is, this is how it always used to be. And it was really, really cool when it was like this. And for New Japan Pro Wrestling, what I really hope more than anything is that they're looking at the reaction to this, whether it be in the media in Japan, among fans in Japan, on social media, both in Japan and here in the US. They're looking at the reaction and the buzz that this generated and comparing that to the lack of buzz that, you know, the 10th Bullet Club leadership switch drew, or the absolute nothing in terms of interest that the whole work shoot storyline with Carl Anderson and the never open weight title drew. Like, this is the type of stuff that people want to see. This is the type of stuff that feels more fresh than the stuff they've rehashed over and over and over again for the last 10 years. Maybe it's time to give that sort of stuff a break for a decade or two, like they gave this sort of stuff a break for a decade.
And you know what? You don't even have to do that, because let's say you want to go ahead and make the change and have El Fantasmo take over Bullet Club and change the look of it and all that stuff. Better to do it at a time where you have some other hot stuff going on. You know what I mean?
True.
So,
yeah.
You know,
don't
if you're
put so much
make
pressure
move,
on it.
Especially if it's going to, you know, be a lead balloon again, like Evil. Now, again, look, Evil, you do Evil at a different time. I still think ultimately what happens, but doing it during the pandemic was a complete nightmare. And it was
so stubborn to do it during the pandemic and continue doing it.
It was a series of banana peels after that in a lot of ways for a long time. So, you know, you got something here and making this thing hot, making it happen. Like I said, again, where they go from here, well, then we can judge that as it goes along. But to me, this was a good start. New Japan got, if you include the pre-match shows, which were split, they got 5 wins. Noah got 4. There was the one no contest, and then there was the one mixed tag match where Tanahashi, Yano, Kojima, and Sugiura defeated Marufuji, Kenta, Phantasmo, and Gedo. And Marufuji just, you know, had to avoid the Bullet Club like the plague. And Adam, I don't know if you want to talk about the 2 matches that took place before that, but, you know, that 8-man tag was essentially what started the show proper.
Yeah, I mean, I would say just the main thing to take away from the pre-show matches is watching Kosei Fujita in interpromotional matches with other guys of around his experience level, whether it be the feud that he has with Ryo Inoue in All Japan, or here the sort of ongoing, even though there's a year apart between matches, rivalry with Yasutaka Yano. I love that. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot with the Kidemiya and Abba versus Ishii and Loewe match, except for it was fun watching Ishii and Kidemiya run into each other. I could do that any day of the week.
Yes, I am. You know, I got a huge soft spot for Kidemiya. So yeah, I would be completely fine with that.
So yeah, we had that. You mentioned the sort of everyone mashed together, eight-man tag. You know, that was what it was. Jan opens Gato. It was just something to pass the time. Desperado beating Yohei. That was fun. That was something that, you know, they talked about wanting to do going back to last year. And I think this is really what we're going to see for Desperado for the next year or two, is him, whether it be in matches in New Japan, whether it be doing matches against Noah guys, going over the U.S., we're going to see a lot of El Desperado as kind of a traveling dream match guy, rather than, I think, being primarily focused as like the top heavyweight, or excuse me, top junior heavyweight in New Japan, like he arguably had been presented the last couple of years.
I know Rocky Romero is a highfalutin NWA historic welterweight champion now, but I have got to drop him a line and get him to get me in contact with Desperado, because I've got...
You want to wrestle Desperado at GCW? No, are we breaking news here?
No. I don't want to do that. No.
I saw Dave Prazak do a moonsault this weekend on Twitter, so anything is possible.
Did he really?
He did. There's a GIF of it out there. I'll find it and retweet it. Dave Prazak did a moonsault onto a pile of like 10 guys while Cole Radrick had the NXT shocked face in the ring. It was great.
Was that the news? They did the 3 shows this weekend. I'm going to have to see all 3 of them now to see what I missed there. But my God, Desperado, I got a new gimmick for him, and that is like Kung Fu. And I mean like David Carradine Kung Fu, where he just roams the earth now. And we have, like, you know, and he's Desperado, so he can do that. But I need, you know, more of a Kung Fu style feel to it. We need vignettes. We need him just going from promotion to promotion and his journeys to get there, set to dramatic music.
You want him to come to his senses? Quit mending fences?
Yes.
Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe you could make a visit to Double Cross Ranch.
Oh, Terry Funk, my God. Forever! And Desperado will be wrestling forever, I have a feeling, but he defeated...
He's a lifer. We'll be lucky to be alive for his retirement show. That man is not retiring before 65, and God bless him. And again, I'm not saying that to mean that he's old. He's not old right now, but he has so many things he wants to still do in pro wrestling that I don't see his journey ending anytime soon.
No, he seems
like 38, 39, I think, but he's got another good 25 years in him.
Yeah, and he's got a seemingly roving soul inside of him,
yes.
So he's completely fine with this. He's fine not being part. He's done New Japan for a long time, so he's out there doing his thing. And yeah, I think we are going to see a lot more of that, and good. And you know what? Good for him if... Again, I don't know how much he wants to travel or anything like that, but he's one of those guys where you do a big barnstorm of the United States and Mexico. Phew, man, you know, that could be a huge deal. And, you know, I don't know. Again, I don't know for Strong if they're going to lean on him, but, you know, I would love to see him over here, you know.
Well, if Strong's even going to be a thing, I mean, that seems...
Well, I mean, yeah, and I shouldn't say Strong, but, you know, New Japan Weekends, which, again, at some point I would assume are going to be in conjunction with Ring of Honor Weekends. It would only make sense for that to happen, so... Man, I'd love to see him over here and do a couple of indie shots, do West Coast Pro, do Defy, do GCW, you know, and then work in
Mexico
for
CMLL. Come out
here
to Chicago, damn it.
Well, work for Warrior, work for AEW, yes. Absolutely.
Yes, we need a lot of El Desperado roaming the plains, as you mentioned. That death match with Jon Moxley last year in the States was not enough. We need a lot more of that. I don't have a ton to say about the junior heavyweight six-man tag that took place afterwards. Amakusa's twisting suicide dive was one of the most beautifully graceful things I've seen in wrestling this side of being in the building at Warrior Wrestling in South Bend this weekend, when Vikingo leapt to the super narrow brick wall from the top corner post and then did an incredible twisting dive off the wall. That was literally off the wall and figuratively. So, but outside of that, that dive from Amakusa this weekend was one of the most graceful things I've seen. Really, that match, if nothing else, just kind of was there to set him up as the guy to be opposite of Hiromu Takahashi going forward.
Much more graceful than Hakushi's dive through the announce table.
Oh my God. We'll get to that. Holy crap. The idea that in a Darby Allin match in 2023, Hakushi had the craziest bump. Somehow not as wild as watching Sting do his Sting no sells, which I love, of a Naomichi Marufuji chop. Talk about paths you never thought would cross as long as you live. But we'll get to that show momentarily. We talked at length about everything involving Okada, Makabe versus Kiyomiya Inamura. It was awesome, obviously. The best of five series, you touched on that earlier. To me, the most noteworthy thing about this, and maybe I'm overthinking this, but kind of a clue as to where this could be going in terms of which promotion gets the advantage politically in terms of the booking as this all goes forward, is that here, while, you know, you mentioned, you know, Manabu Soya got the win over Sonata. Like, Soya's just, he's a guy, and he loses some, he wins some, he'll get a title shot, you know, for a secondary title, but, you know, he's never going to be a main guy. So, like, the win over Sonata, it's nice, but it doesn't really mean anything in the long run. The fact that Nakajima lost to Shingo and Kenno lost to Tetsuya Naito pretty definitively in both of those matches, it leads me to believe that both this is going to continue going forward, the New Japan versus Noah stuff, and it kind of makes me think like Kaito Kiyomiya has a pretty damn good shot of beating Kazuchika Okada on February 21st, because at some point, and maybe it won't be, maybe this will be like all the time where the bigger company runs roughshod over the smaller company. But the way this series went, it made me think, man, like there's gotta be a make good for Noah, or a, you know, Noah coming out on top sometime soon through all of this and being on a Noah show, which the February 21st Tokyo Dome Keiji Muto retirement show technically is, you know, it makes you wonder.
Or they go to a 60-minute draw there because, or they'll go to some sort of no
contest. That's the most likely.
Well, you know, or they'll go to some sort of no contest there. I don't know if you want to go to a draw before that Muto match of that time length, but to have it thrown out after 32 minutes or something like that, I could see that happening. And what I could also see, and, you know, I could picture it happening where Kenno wins the NEVER title, or you see a presence of Noah then to get one over. Okay, they're walking around with an IWGP championship of some sort, and you have enough of them, you know, where you could do that if you wanted to in the NEVER title. Again, depending on what happens with Tama Tonga and Hikuleo, that might be an open door to do that if you wanted to. So, I don't know.
I hope it does. Yeah. I hope this splinters off more, you know, to more guys like that. The other thing,
because here's the thing, Okada loses nothing really in the grand scheme of things losing to Kiyomiya. I just, but if you're New Japan, you know, no.
What's your end game for New Japan?
What do you get out of that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what makes this all so interesting, is that like a draw is both unsatisfying and, to your point, do you really want to do a 60-minute draw right before Keiji Muto's retirement match? But you also feel like Noah needs to get something out of this. As far as how we're going to get there, it's interesting to me in that they've thrown another wrench into all this from a storyline standpoint, in that after Sunday's New Japan show, in his backstage comments, Okada said, "No one told me about this. No one asked me my opinion on this match. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to the Tokyo Dome. I'm not going to wrestle Kiyomiya." Obviously, the match is going to happen. They would not have made the big announcement, put the graphics up, you know, they're selling tickets to that show. The match is going to happen. But what seems to be happening in the storyline is that Kiyomiya is going to have to do something else to piss Okada off enough to come to the Tokyo Dome and wrestle him. So I wonder if on February 4th, when we have the match coming up, I believe it's February 4th with Okada and Shingo Takagi for the IWGP World Heavyweight title. That is coming up. That's coming up on the 11th. So that's the 11th in Osaka. Okay, so this gets even more interesting. Okada versus Shingo Takagi is on the 11th for the World Heavyweight title, IWGP, New Japan Pro Wrestling. The next day, in the same building, Kaito Kiyomiya is defending the GHC Heavyweight title against Jack Morris. The, as you would say, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, crappy American-style way of doing this would be to have Kiyomiya on the 11th cost Okada the IWGP World title. Then the next night, Okada costs Kiyomiya the GHC Heavyweight title. I don't necessarily think that will happen, but I would fall over shocked if we don't see Kiyomiya attack and lay out and bloody Okada after Okada successfully defends against Shingo Takagi on the 11th. And then the next night in the same building, Okada doesn't come out and return the favor post-match against Kiyomiya, or maybe even attack Kiyomiya during his entrance and bloody him and actually put a little bit of doubt into the defense against Jack Morris before Kiyomiya overcomes him. It just feels like things are set up both in terms of the calendar and the Google Maps, I guess you could say, to make that work.
One of the things I like about this, too, is through Kota Ibushi this year, fans got punched in the face with they book matches without telling us. And then we got that with Carl Anderson, or we at least had something in the mix there. And was it, who else was it? Was it Fredericks, or there was somebody else who was
Clark Connors, where they announced him for the tournament. He's like, oh wait, sorry. Yeah. My groin is destroyed. I can't come on the tour. Why are you announcing me for a tour? You know, I'm injured.
Yeah. So we've had these situations where this has happened, where now Okada, by saying this, is now playing off of that as well too. At least it would seem to be on the surface. That's what he's doing, on top of the fact that, you know, he's in his emotions about all of this. And, you know, you didn't ask me and you didn't tell me, and I'm not going to do this. And it is very interesting. Now, one thing that could happen too is Shingo wins the title, and I don't think that will happen, but I think they'll just go and have some sort of no contest or something like that happen. But what is interesting is they are going to have to do some heat ups to this that aren't involved in the media, because as you mentioned, there's going to have to be something done by Kiyomiya to keep ramming it down Okada's throat and keep, you know, bringing the drama to this whole scene while he plays, you know, tries to play calm about this and tries to be dismissive about it in the media. You know, he's got to be the firebrand. So how they do this is going to be really interesting and fun, and see where does he pop up? How does he pop up? What does the rest of Noah do? You know, are they following him into this? You know, because again, is all of this over with LIJ and Kongo? It's hard for me to believe with Kenno and with Nakajima and the way the characters they are that everything's over for them too.
Yeah, I would be shocked if we don't see some sort of Kongo
and
LIJ
interaction. Look, and you didn't mention them, but like even Hideki Suzuki, Timothy Thatcher, they go in and go lower down on the New Japan card to mix it up with or to bully Ren Narita or something like that. There are things that could be blended into this going forward. And again, too, you know, if they decide that this is a path that they want to take for most of the year and have Noah interplay throughout the year, you know, this ends with a G1. It could end with something interesting for the Dome next year. not the least of which could be Naito trying to save face for New Japan or something like that. So then that way he might be able to get his IWGP conquering title victory, or gets a conquering victory over a Kiyomiya or a somebody at the Dome. So obviously we fantasy booked this thing now out way too far. But again, everything as it stands right now and how they laid out everything and the victories that took place at Yokohama Arena, I think were a good first step.
Yeah, I think for sure. And I think it's going to be a narrow path to start with Kiyomiya and Okada. And depending on how that goes, I could definitely see it widen. The other thing that I was going to mention was that beyond the IWGP title match on February 11th in Osaka, and beyond the GHC heavyweight title match on February 12th in Osaka, we also have lingering out there whoever the IWGP champion is going to be, which is overwhelmingly likely to be Okada, is going to be defending on February 18th in the United States in San Jose at Battle in the Valley. I don't think this will happen, but if you really want to heat this up and you want to continue to get Western interest, maybe Kiyomiya makes a shock appearance and attacks Okada after that as a final build 3 days before the big show in the Tokyo Dome.
That trip better be funded by Tony Khan with an appearance on Dynamite as
yes.
well, too, to face Bryan Danielson, because otherwise, and then if you're doing that, that's bad because he's probably going to take an L on that show. So then that kind of flies in the face of anything for if you're New Japan, that's what you're doing. I think
well,
that
timing wise, I don't think you could. I don't.
Too much to like, ask for.
Well, and in theory, you'd like to have that happen, but if you did send him over, and then he appears on that on Wednesday, then everyone's going to know that he's in the U.S. and there's a chance that he could come out and attack Okada. To me, the value in having him attack Okada in the U.S. would be like, holy shit, Kiyomiya's here? He came all the way to the U.S. to try to take Okada out, or, you know, to get under his skin prior to the match. I don't think that'll happen, but, you know, it also, with what we've seen over the past week in Japan, I'm also not in the business of saying X, Y, or Z isn't going to happen, because so many things happen, whether it be on this show or the following night, which we can get into, of the Great Muta final. So many things are happening right now that you wouldn't necessarily expect, and it's hard to necessarily see how they're going to play out.
And look, both these companies want to drive subs in American dollars and in euros.
Pay-per-view buys, because they're doing these shows. They're all on pay-per-view. None of these shows that we've talked about are shows that are, you know, whether it be the New Japan versus Noah shows they've done the last years at Yokohama Arena, or the Muta final show. These are pay-per-view shows, and so you got to get people to pay.
Yeah, and you want to try to retain those people. And if you're Noah, I mean, again, we're talking about, again, and I love everybody listening to this show, but we are, you know, niches of niches. And whether anybody likes that or not, it is what it is. So if you're Noah in the States, you know, the only thing you can do is to latch on to New Japan and hopefully take that ride and hopefully, you know, put your women up and who get, you know, actual attention on AEW TV, your Yamashitas and people like that. And then, you know, try to, you know, hey, over here, you know, make sure you're buying Wrestle Universe and make sure you are subscribed to us. And the same thing with New Japan. And obviously they don't need Noah to do what they're doing, but, you know, they need to really focus on continuing to claw away and get as many subscribers as they can and making sure they retained everybody that came in for Mercedes and Kenny and make sure that they're retained throughout February and that they're going to be strong as we go into May and June and when things really heat up.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes on, you know, both sides, what you said for New Japan, what you said for Noah. And it's, you know, these tentpole shows where it's not just Noah on their own, but it's not just, you know, Keiji Muto's Endless Retirement Road, but it's all these guest stars. These are the things where they need to put their best foot forward and, like you said, expose people to the product, which this show, the Great Muta Final Bye-Bye, the same arena, Yokohama Arena, this past Sunday on January 22nd, is another one of those shows. I don't think, at least, that we need to go through every single match on this show, but there's a few things that really stood out, one of which we'll get to, obviously, is the six-man tag main event to end this show. The other thing that I found very, very interesting, both the match and the backstage comments afterwards, the Who is the Valkyrie? The women's match here, which you can count on one hand and have several fingers left over the amount of times you've seen a women's match in pro wrestling, Noah. It was Saori Anu and Jungle Kiona taking on Sumire Natsu and Mayu Yukihi, who is also participating in the Stardom Triangle Derby tournament right now. But the fact that this match happened, the fact that this was four women on a Noah show, that being a cyber fight show, and it was four freelancers of sorts rather than Tokyo Joshi pro wrestlers, was very interesting. And the fact that in the post-match backstage comments, Jungle Kiona openly called for more women's matches in Noah and the creation of a GHC Women's Championship. To me, it's been one of the interesting things to look out for since Cyber Agent, Cyber Fight, you know, took over pro wrestling Noah, and they've got all these different companies. The one thing they don't have, and they have Tokyo Joshi Pro, which is successful. It's its own niche thing. But they don't have their own real competitor to Stardom. And in terms of like, well, we can start something, whether it be a women's division in one of our men's companies or a separate company where we can kind of bid for the same talent that Stardom keeps grabbing from all over the business. You almost wonder if something like this in pro wrestling Noah is the beginning of Cyber Fight moving towards a more competitive landscape on their end, on the women's side, more than just continuing to run Tokyo Joshi Pro as is.
In my opinion, this is just me, they would be better off folding Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Oh my God. Just be prepared.
I know.
Be prepared for your inbox and your mentions. Go on. I'm just saying, watch out.
Here's why. I have been, and the reason why is we have talked about on this show when we would talk about like Neo title defenses with Tamura, and we talk about LLPW, and we'd go through, and we remember we used to give the results to every single, you know, indie women's promotion.
Yeah.
On the, and everything was so fractured and too fractured. And I'm not saying that TJP needs to go away, but when I look at Noah and I see a lot of the names that they have and the lack of homegrown stars other than a handful, and I look at the age of some of the guys that they do have there, and I just kind of look at things and I look at the small niche that TJP has on its own, and I see, you know, again, I see the attention that they get when they're on AEW shows and how impressed people are when they stick around and they see them at you know, pardon me, on the West Coast and on indie shows. And I see the attention that they get, and I go, man, you know, would that fifth match or sixth, seventh match on a 10-match Noah show be better off to be Yamashita against somebody for the TJP title? You don't even have to call it the GHC title. And the same thing on DDT shows. And that's me running their business for them without their philosophy and attaching mine to it. But to me, in some ways, I think that they would be, because they're going to be able to create women's talent at a faster clip in some ways than they do men's talent, as far as them making impacts at a certain scale inside like TJP as opposed to Noah. But what does that mean? You know, what does that mean unless they're on AEW TV? So, you know, again, this is, I'm not asking for it. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not, you know, being a proponent for it. I just look at Noah shows and I look sometimes at DDT shows and I go, you know, to me, and I look at the TJP shows and the attendance and the attention that they get and the buzz that, you know, they get in comparison to what Stardom gets after the fact. And man, you know, I just wonder if they would be better off on 10, 11 match Noah shows to have two or three women's matches mixed in there.
I mean, I think it would make for better Noah shows. I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that I would want that to happen because I enjoy the existence of Tokyo Joshi Pro, but I think they're all valid questions to ask when you see something like this, where you have on a Noah show for non Tokyo Joshi Pro wrestlers have a match And then those wrestlers backstage are talking about wanting there to be a GHC Women's Championship. Like, if that happened, would Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestlers wrestle against a Saori Ano or a Jungle Kiona? Because we certainly talk about isolationist companies. You certainly don't see Tokyo Joshi Pro integrating themselves into the Japanese women's scene at all. And so it's just, it's an interesting situation that they find themselves in terms of Pro Wrestling NOAH and the overarching cyber fight group, that they are apparently pushing forward with something like this at a time where they have their own women's promotion, but their own women's promotion does not seem to be involved with what they're doing with women on the NOAH side. So it's one of those, you know, put a pin in it, you know, watch this space sort of things. Other things on the show that I found interesting, Jake Lee, Jack Morris, and Anthony Green are a group now in Pro Wrestling NOAH. As I mentioned earlier, GLG, good looking guys, which I don't know, group names in Japan in 2023 are something else. We have just four guys in New Japan, and now we've got good-looking guys in Pro Wrestling NOAH. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about Jake Lee in NOAH. I love Jake Lee. I think he's, as a wrestler, I enjoy him. I think he's a unique, kind of odd personality, and NOAH could use more of that. And I'm not saying this as a slight to either Jack Morris or Anthony Green, because they're fine wrestlers, but when I heard Jake Lee was leaving All Japan, and I thought of all the different things he could do, whether it be in New Japan or NOAH or as a freelancer, I don't know that putting him in a group with Anthony Green and Jack Morris would have been on my list.
Yeah,
But it might work. Who knows? It might work.
Yeah, I we'll have to see. You know, look, they're high on Jack Morris. And Anthony Green, I think, to a different level, and obviously they're going to be doing something with Jake Lee. So we'll see, you know, again, it doesn't on the surface, you know,
it's better than being in a group with Kendo Kashin.
Well, that's true. That's true. If you're going to have to attach him to somebody, at least again, there's two guys who, again, we'll just have to see how it goes. I with a lot of groups in Japan, you know, it's like, okay, we'll see. But then again, if not them, who would you have hooked him up with? If you think about it, I don't want him hooked up with the older guys, you know,
him in Congo would have just been like, we can't have 30 guys in Congo.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been overkill. Exactly.
So, you know, this is, we'll see if, you know, who else he attracts to be in this group. If it's, you know, something where we end up with five people.
Yeah, what other GLGs are out there waiting to join this group? By the way, did you catch the origin story of this group? You know, Jake Lee, obviously, after Jack Morris's match at Budokan, came out and joined forces with Jake Lee, or with Jack Morris. And then here, they said on commentary that Anthony Green arrived at the airport, and when he stepped off the plane, Jake Lee was holding a GLG shirt, and Anthony Green immediately joined, not even knowing what that was. I don't know if I think that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard or my favorite wrestling faction origin story of all time.
Well, we'll see how the whole thing turns out, and then you can go ahead and change your mind, you know, when it happens. But look, I don't know, Miyawaki? I don't know who else you could fold in there if you have one younger guy and one guy you're trying to bring up or something like that.
Miyawaki might actually work, particularly because how much on the New Japan commentary side for the New Japan versus NOAH show, Kevin Kelly kept going on about how good looking Miyawaki was. Maybe he got word that Miyawaki was going to join GLG, and he was doing some good foreshadowing, helping out Pro Wrestling NOAH. Who knows?
I think we're going to see him booked at the next show in Pennsylvania that Kevin puts together. I have a feeling after hearing that was, yes.
American Wrestling X or whatever it is.
Yes. Again, I thought we were going to get a little X-rated there when he started talking about the glutes, but thankfully he was able to calm down a little bit.
He did talk about medications that have swollen perineum side effects on today's New Japan show. So things sometimes go delightfully off the rails with Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton, and happened a few times over the course of the past few days. What was not off the rails, and maybe need to go a little bit more off the rails than it did to be entertaining, and this pains me to say this, Mike, Sakuraba, Hideki Suzuki, GHC martial arts rules match, it was boring. And I love Hideki Suzuki's at work. Huge fan. Kazushi Sakuraba, obviously. Everyone loves Sakuraba going back to the Pride days and beyond. I've been on record saying that I've not really enjoyed Sakuraba doing the shoot style wrestling matches that he's done the past few years in Noah, just because I find, compared to other guys, he's just boring. And they just didn't really do anything here until a cool finish with a triangle choke that put Suzuki to sleep. This was not a good weekend for fake MMA on pro wrestling shows, between that and the Shingo Takagi Great Okan match in New Japan on the same day.
It was great to hear the music. You know what I mean? It was great to hear, what was it, Speed TK 39. And it was great to hear that again. And I thought the set looked great. I thought
oh
it was
my God.
right
the set
out
was
of
it, beautiful this, for the show.
Yeah, it was. This is going to sound really like dumb. It was like an N64, like No Mercy style. It was it was cool, but it wasn't too exotic. But the way the lights came out, it was a really sharp looking. And again, Noah's very good with their production.
Much better than New Japan. That's the one thing. You look at the two shows back-to-back in this same building, the New Japan Noah show that New Japan produced and the Great Muda Final Bye-Bye that Noah produced, light years better in terms of visual production, the set. It's the one thing Noah has over New Japan right now, and it's not arguable. Their shows look and feel like individual major events.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In New Japan, you know, still with the Tokyo Dome, their one-off is going to be bigger, but consistently, nah, Noah's absolutely got them. And here's the thing. It does not make me popular to say this, although now it's a lot safer to say this than it used to be back in the day, but
I'm terrified, but go on.
Kazushi Sakuraba was never a good professional wrestler. And
I agree with you.
You know, the NWA was a middleweight title match with Motegi on the road to the Super J. I can't remember what his match is on there, but when you watch him in UWFI and, you know, the Volcans and the Kyoshi Tamuras and Tamuras and your Shamrocks and the, to me, he was a fighter. He was a good fighter. He was not a good worked wrestler. He never has been. And he's the oldest 53-year-old on the planet now. He looks like shit. He moves like shit. I'm happy he's alive. I'm happy he's doing what he wants to do, if this is what he wants to do. But that Sakuraba that had taken an insane amount of punishment by the time I got to him in the early 2000s, you know, and him and Noah, and him and we talked about it when he came back, when they did the deal with New Japan, and we had concern there, and things ended up working out for the best, the whole Gracie deal and bringing him back and doing what they did there. But his extended life in Noah, while it makes sense with Kaz Fujita and with Funaki and with the people that they've had there, it does make sense. Doesn't mean I've wanted to see it, and it doesn't mean that I think it's all that entertaining, and this was not. And a lot of it is really, it's him. You know, go ahead and put Suzuki on a Bloodsport show against somebody. You know it's probably going to be flames. The reason this wasn't was because this was just a tribute Sakuraba match. And I'm not trying to hang Sakuraba. I mean, he's one of the reasons that Pride was incredible. He was incredible to watch as the Gracie Hunter, all that stuff. You know, the olden days of the UFC that I go back to, you know, talking about him. But, like, that's what he was best at. And as the years go on, this stuff becomes less and less entertaining because he doesn't have that great Kojika, comedy to him. He doesn't have a mysticism to him. He's a technical wrestler, and I mean, it's like 74-year-old Luthez against Chono. I didn't really want to see that either. And unfortunately, I don't want to see 53-year-old Sakuraba mix it up with anybody with the exception of maybe bringing his name to a Glate show, you know, to do an exhibition for 5 minutes there.
Well, yeah, I'm shocked that he didn't, like, go over Kaito Ishida on the Glate MMA show. I guess that's the only thing they missed as far as burying all the
guys. Even they can't afford him.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. Don't want to give him any ideas for 2023. But, yeah, Sakuraba, obviously one of the greatest fighters of all time. But particularly here in 2023, there isn't a long list of guys that do shoot style right now or do it well. To begin with, but he's...
When's the last time he had a good wrestling match?
Shinsuke Nakamura?
Yeah. Jesus, and that was... How long has it been
now?
It's
got to be going back 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to...
10 years ago.
Trying to do the quick cage match thing as we go along here, but like... And the thing is, like, how many besides that? And I go... 8.61 they actually give him on cage match. Which blows my mind.
Yeah,
I gotta see this. So, okay, Nakajima and Kitamiya against Sakuraba and Sugiura from March of 2021. And I do remember that match being good.
It was a great match, and it was largely because of the other three guys in the match.
Sakuraba and Nakamura in 2013. Shibata and Sakuraba in 2015, which I don't remember being as good as...
No, I remember that. Being good, but nothing more than that. And I'm as in the tank for Katsuyori Shibata as a human being as ever been.
And here's the thing. There's one more from 2015, which is a six-man tag or an eight-man tag, which also includes Michael Elgin, if we're going back that far here. They got four stars in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. But everything that comes after this are matches with guys like Marufuji and Nakajima, and then his presence in tag matches, and they're all from 2021, 2020, 2022, and it's like they're all 7-8s, 7-6s, 7-5s, and it's like, there you go. You know, it's a long time. You know, you got Minoru Suzuki in there, which I thought that match probably was better than it deserves credit for, but like, you know, these must be big Noah fans putting in votes for this stuff and paying attention to this stuff.
Big Pride fans.
You know, it's crazy to me. That's nutty to me, you know.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, again, you're going back to days of New Japan where, again, we saw that style. We saw that style in action with guys who were much better at working it.
Oh, yeah, and even in his prime, like you said, there's a laundry list of guys that were better shoot-style pro wrestlers than the wrestler Kazushi Sakuraba. So I think we can put a
Sakuraba against Kendo Kashin, folks. Ishizawa, December 10th, 1995. God bless.
Tokumitsu Ishizawa, who I believe right around that time was appearing on the Collision in Korea show in the opening match. The pre-Kendo Kashin version of him. But thankfully, there's not a whole lot of Kendo Kashin, at least to deal with here on the rest of this show. We'll kind of blast through to the main event of this show, which
Dragon Soldier
Best of the Super Junior USA. Never forget. The End of Nightmare, though, a different type of nightmare. End of Nightmare main event for this show, which we should mention, 8,400 fans. So very good crowd, as it should have been for the final Great Muta match ever, if you believe that Muta / Muto is actually retiring. The Great Muta teaming with his longtime rival / partner Sting, and Darby Allin defeated Naomichi Marufuji in the face paint. Hakushi, that being Jinsei Shinzaki doing his WWE character, and all caps Akira, in 22 minutes and 23 seconds. The match is almost inconsequential. Mike, the entrances for this, they were perfect. We had a video montage of stills featuring Sting and Great Muta interaction, whether it be them as rivals, them teaming in Japan, and those stills, that video was set to Sting's original WCW entrance music, which, man, that got me up, sitting up straight on my couch with that. Then we have Darby Allin doing his full AEW entrance, skating down to the ring in that huge building with that huge crowd, that great production. That was a bit of a window into, you know, what an AEW with higher production values could look like. Then we get Sting coming out to his AEW music with the snow falling. Muda comes out. And man, you combine that with the Hakushi entrance music with the WWE theme song, the WWF theme song that we remember from Hakushi. Great Kojika, the Great Kabuki. My brain is broken right now. I'm like, the Great Kabuki coming out with Muda doing the nunchucks. This was awesome. As I say jokingly about things, the power could have gone out before the match started, and I still would have been happy just with the entrances.
It was an incredible spectacle. It was, again, we talked about how cool the setup was anyway, and then you unleash these entrances because, and anything you want to say, and believe me, we've said it all about Keiji Muto over the last God knows how many years when it comes to some of his performances, but as far as his outfit, the aesthetic, all of that, goddamn, there is no one like him. He's a superstar. He's one of the all-time greats. He's Keiji Muto. He is the great Muta.
The reason we're all here, we've talked about it before.
And it was incredible. And you mentioned the videos that they did beforehand. I thought they were awesome. And using the different themes and mixing those in, I thought that was incredible. I thought it was, you know, at times beautiful, the cinematography and the art that they use. And I'm a cherry blossom sucker anyway. I love them. I love the fact that the Nationals are using all the teams in D.C. are using it. It's fantastic. And, you know, they had a little of that, you know, for the still shot as the opening. It just, they did an expert job as far as getting the most you could out of what was going to be, for the most part, very little in the ring, because we know exactly what he is. It's one of the reasons that we want to see him go away, is because he just can't do it anymore. But it does make me sad because they show the initial 1989, you know, and I had a chance to see him in World Class. I didn't see him in Puerto Rico or in Florida, but I saw the Super Black Ninja on World Class TV because we got that. And then he shows up with Gary Hart, who I've always loved, but, you know, Al Perez, Larry Zbysko, he didn't have it going on. And goddamn, 89 happens, and it was so great because the great Mota initially comes in as presented by Hiro Matsuda, and Gary Hart, he wants to show all you ignorant Americans who only know kung fu that this man knows the whole gamut of the martial arts, and he's here to take over. And then they incorporate the story of him being the son of Kabuki. His name actually fleshes out to being the great Muda. And then instantly him coming in, we're seeing backflips, we're seeing elbows dropped at such a quick rate. I mean, I always love the corkscrew elbow from Buddy Landell, but my God, Muda, the quick elbows, you know, the way he moved and just wiping out guys left and right, got into a feud with Eddie Gilbert right off the bat, which was a perfect thing to do to show his evil against Missy Hyatt. And then from there, just like that, he's in there with Sting, he's in there with Ric Flair, and I've talked ad nauseum about that, about 1989, how much that means to me, the Great American Bash, all that sort of stuff, JTEX, it was incredible stuff. So, you know, this whole thing coming full circle, Sting and Muda, our favorites, still being there at the end, and I can't say anything bad about Darby Allin, can't say anything bad about anybody else who was in the match there. I mean, Akira, how nice it was. And I was never a big Akira fan back in the day for New Japan. But when he got his comeback a couple of years ago, it's been more than a couple of years ago. Remember, he got that little run back. Like, he did a good job. And him being called off the bench as a generational member with Muda, I thought that was really cool. And Hakushi, Jinsei Shinzaki, is in such great shape. He's never in bad shape, 56 years old. You know, all the training that he does, everything that he, him being called in, I thought was nice too. I thought that was great. You know, in a fantasy land, you know, the two guys standing next to him are Chono and Hashimoto, but obviously, for plenty of reasons, that can't happen. But I thought the way that this whole thing turned out, I think especially if you're a foreign fan, with Hakushi, with Marufuji, with Sting, with Darby, with Muta. I mean, it couldn't have been any better, I don't think.
Well, and even with Akira, I mean, if you're someone who, you know, was turned on to the idea of Japanese pro wrestling by seeing Great Muta do these crazy things in 1989 in WCW, the next thing that kind of got you over the finish line, like it was with me, was the first WCW New Japan Super Show, and Akira was on that show against Jushin Liger. So it's another guy that people have memories of.
Akira Nogami, yeah.
Yep, in the full face paint. You had, as you mentioned, Hakushi here. Good Lord, if you would have told me that in a match with Darby Allin, Hakushi would have had the craziest bump of the match and of the night, I wouldn't have necessarily believed it. But him getting knocked off the apron and going over the guardrail through that table, it harkened back to that insane spot with Dr. Death Steve Williams in All Japan, where he got press slammed over the guardrail onto a table. I don't know what got into him, but it was awesome. It was also great to have the...
How great was it for Sting to actually be able to do that to somebody else for once?
Yes, exactly. He wasn't the one... he wasn't playing New Jack or Sabu or any of those guys in this match for once in this twilight of Sting's career. One of the other takeaways that I had from this, other than just how cool it was to see Sting in Japan one more time, how happy I was for him that the fans remembered and reacted to him. It was just fun to see him watching Muta. The other takeaway I have from this is, whether it be New Japan or Noah, they both need to be working the phones with AEW and with Tony Khan, trying to get dates for Darby Allin, because that character and him as a wrestler translated immediately in front of a Japanese audience, in front of a pretty interesting audience for this crowd that I'm sure was made up of, you know, your core couple thousand Noah fans that go to shows, but also a lot of people who were there to see Great Muta's final match, to see Sting in Japan again. The people were into Darby Allin, and they were clapping to his theme song. They seemed to know his spots, and whenever he did anything big, they were there with him. There, to me, there's a lot of legs in Darby Allin being booked in big spectacle matches in Japan going forward, and we'll see, I guess, you know, which company is able to do that. But they both should be on the phone.
Should be DDT. Yeah, well, the money. Now, granted, they don't have enough money coming out of that spigot for them, I don't think. But like, that would make the most sense to have those DDT shows that you're trying to increase presence on. I mean, I think that would be. That would be great. There are, and that's just
be
because
great booking for a Cyber Fight Festival show. That's for sure.
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely. And again, that's where Darby Allin, he's a big match wrestler. I don't want to see if he's on there every week. I won't complain. But with the type of style that he likes to work, to me, he is what he is. If you only use him once every 2 months, then that's what it is. Same thing with AEW, where you just maximize what you can get out of him, what he feels like doing in the biggest situations you can, and you just hope he doesn't kill himself too much so you can use him the next time around. But, you know, I know people love seeing him with that TNT title and love seeing him on TV every week, and I think there's a reason for that. But to me, in my world, he's a little bit more special and a little bit more spaced out because he does have... My God, he's just so he's great.
He has an aura.
He's so great.
He has an aura, and there's so few wrestlers in modern wrestling that have, and he's a small guy, which makes it even crazier. He has a larger-than-life aura that obviously comes through an AEW, and it translated here, you know, on this huge stage. And I think on the AEW side, like, I like what they do with him in the sense that he'll kind of not fully go away, but he'll go away for months, and then when he comes back and is a featured character on the show, wins the TNT title. Now, I mean, I think you're seeing, we're not going to get into AEW ratings analysis too much on this show, but you look at what the number they did last week, there's no reason for them to be near a million last week. And I look at it and think, well, people are hyped to see pushed Darby Allin as the TNT champion again, having big, crazy matches. But yeah, I want to see more of him in Japan, and I want to see more. I think this kind of ties back into everything of big spectacle matches in Japan. That was one of the major things about Japanese wrestling for so long, was whether it be the Tokyo Dome or elsewhere. And the matches didn't even always necessarily have to be great. I mean, sometimes they weren't. Sometimes they were just big spectacles like the Great Muta against Jinsei Shinzaki, at the Dome many, many, many years ago. But having those big spectacle matches, whether it was Muta Nakamura, last month or earlier this month, here with this this six-man tag, what we're going to see with Okada and Kiyomiya, the more things that you can do that actually can make things feel larger than life, I'm 100% here for it. I think Darby Allin has the chance to be more of that type of guy in Japan than some people might think, sort of when used sparingly, as you said.
Long feud with Tadasuke.
That's what you want?
No. He beats Dante Leon to death with the skateboard there. Poor Dante. Yeah, I don't know why I'm picking on Dante. I just picked a name out.
It is crazy how close we came to like a Dante Leon, Ninja Mac, Darby Allin three-way.
He could do flips because he can't dance to save his ass.
Oh, Dante Leon?
Yes.
that was quite the interesting deal.
Sonny Ono still out there with Ultimo Dragon. And Ultimo Dragon, one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. He really, there was a time for years I would say, hey, show me a bad Ultimo Dragon match. And then he started having bad Ultimo Dragon matches, especially down in Mexico when he was down there. But I always, an ultimate survivor, stuck his hands in a lot of things, the winery and this and that. And, I don't know if he is bleeding anyone dry or anything like that, but he always seems to have a needle in the vein of something. So I got to give him that. And the same thing with Sonny Ono, who, again, he's like his friend Eric Bischoff, he's always going to be creeping around the business, I guess, and always figure out a way to get paid.
He's in the margins of the pages, crawling his way to the lines, no matter what you do. I did get a kick out of seeing Sonny Ono on that show, even if I shouldn't have. Just briefly before we get to, and we're not going to do an hour and a half into this show, a full in-depth rundown of the Muto retirement show, but we'll quickly run through the matches on there. But just to give everyone a sense of, obviously we're hurtling headlong towards Kiyomiya and Okada on that show, but New Japan and Noah both have a bunch of relatively big shows coming up before then in the few weeks leading up to it. We've got New Japan coming up on the 4th with Francesco Akira and TJP defending the junior tag titles against Kanemaru and Doki. Osprey versus Taichi and Shota Umino versus Tetsuya Naito on that same show. The following night in Hokkaido, same building, Goto and Yoshihashi against TMDK for the tag belts. Zack Sabre Jr. against Tomohiro Ishii for the TV title. And Hiromu Takahashi against Yo for the junior title. That then leads into February 11th with Hikuleo against Jay White, loser leaves Japan. We've got Tama Tonga and El Phantasmo for the Never Openweight title. And as you mentioned, Kazuchika Okada against Shingo Takagi. We talked about that earlier. And that all then leads into on February 18th, Battle in the Valley, an IWGP world title match of some sort. Kairi against Mercedes Moné. We've got Eddie Kingston against Jay White on that show. Filthy Tom Lawler against Homicide in a no ropes match of sorts. So a lot going on the New Japan side alone before we head into their participation on Noah's Muto retirement show.
Yeah, and again, Jay White, Hikuleo is going to be interesting. Tama Tonga and El Phantasmo is going to be interesting, I think, too. I know the...
You're far more interested in either of those matches than I am, but yes, I understand. From a storyline perspective, the idea of loser leaves Japan when both guys are being rumored to be leaving Japan and New Japan is, it's got a bit of, on a much smaller scale, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar vibes to it. I don't know.
And they, obviously then you're going into San Jose with the news aspect there and just all the newsiness that goes on with the IWGP match and then how much interest Mercedes is going to help, generate for that show. When it comes to the ticket sales, there were so few remaining that
it's hard to really get too excited about.
Yeah,
that.
To me, but when they were talking about the numbers and obviously to me, when it comes to To me, again, I would think Omega deserves a lot more of the credit because of the type of match was being built.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, to me, but like, I can't prove that. But one thing we'll know is, depending on the buzz that comes out of this, and depending on, you know, it coming from different people who aren't usually interested, and we'll, and if they look, if the, we know this now about the numbers, if they're good in some sort of way, they're going to crow. Whether it's by percentage or by giving a number or whatever they're going to do, if they have a good number, they're going to crow about it. So if she does mean something for Battle in the Valley, you know, by the end of the month, maybe we hear about how well Mercedes did for New Japan World, and we'll know that that's a big deal. So
even before we get to that, one of the things we know, Mike, is that New Japan is sending the actual New Japan crew to shoot this show. It's not going to be some second rate local production. It's the actual New Japan Japanese crew that's going to be shooting this show. So that gives you a sense of how important they think this show is, if nothing else.
And look, and that's, look, when I, when I've talked about it on the show, my theories and my philosophy on why it makes sense for them to hook up with ROH so they don't have to do that when they run shows here. They can rely on the incredible, you know, and again, I don't know if they're still using Sinclair equipment. It's not that incredible, but Tony Khan's a billionaire and a millionaire, for heaven's sake. So, you know, to be able to rely on their equipment and not rely on Fight TV or this or that or the other, not to insult anybody out there's production or anything like that, but we saw it during the Royal Quest shows as a good example of, boy, I wish we had more of the aesthetic and more of the equipment of those other shows in New Japan that we're used to seeing. And that's just unfortunate. You've set the bar at a certain level. And yes, I want it to be that way all of the time. It doesn't kill my interest or anything like that, but, you know, it does certainly enhance it. So, you know, yeah, look, they need to put their best foot forward with that show. They need it to be a big, gigantic deal, and we're going to see how it goes. I tell you what, seems to be more buzz going into that than the Royal Rumble this weekend, you know, per, you know, New Japan / Stardom fan being excited about their product as opposed to a lot of WWE people, because this has been a dull time going into that in comparison to what's going on with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe in the truest definition of the word, literally the worst person to offer an analysis on that.
That's, you know,
because I could not even tell you more than a few people that would even be on the Royal Rumble show. So I will definitely defer to you on that. As far as Pro Wrestling Noah heading into later in the month, what they have at the beginning of February, there's the Corkin Hall show, which has Kenya Okada returning after having his orbital bone legitimately broken by Katsuhiko Nakajima in the N1 Victory Tournament last year. He returns. We have Satoshi Kojima in a singles match against Masa Kitamiya. We have Kaito Kiyomiya, Takashi Sugiura, and Naomichi Marufuji against the GLG boys. And then the main event, Iho de Dr. Wagner Jr. defends the national title against Manabu Soya. The bigger show coming up at Yan Arena in Osaka on the 12th, Yoshinori Ogawa and Eita defending against Shunta Miyawaki and Alejandro. Drillistico makes his debut in Pro Wrestling Noah, taking on Atsushi Kitoge. El Desperado teams with Nosawa on the undercard of this show to take on Yohei and Seki Yoshioka. And then the double main event, Takashi Sugiura and Satoshi Kojima defending against Masa Kitamiya and Daiki Inaba for the tag titles. And then the main event, and man, will this be an interesting test of Kaito Kiyomiya as a draw right now in the Edion Arena, which holds about 6,000 people. It's Kaito Kiyomiya defending the GHC heavyweight title against Jack Morris.
Number 47, Jack Morris.
Detroit Tigers, right, among other teams?
Yes, Detroit and Toronto, where I believe he won a World Series with them as well, as well as being part of that incredible 1984 team that I believe began the season 35-5. They did before they went on and smashed the San Diego Padres, which always hurt my feelings because being born in Chicago and Ryan Sandberg being a fan of my mother's and Leon Durham and all that sort of stuff, I really would have liked to have seen the Chicago Cubs go on in advance because...
Wait, hold on.
Yes.
Ryan Sandberg was a fan of your mom, or your mom was a fan of Ryan Sandberg?
My mom.
Because you said, Sandberg, your exact wording was, and this may be us making a bid to actually get on the best of 2023, Your exact wording was Ryan Sandberg being a fan of your mother. And then you also said the way you were that Leon Durham was a fan of your mother. So
my mother, I was a fan of Leon.
Are you trying to tell me that you have like Hall of Fame lineage? Is that what you're getting at here?
I was a fan of Leon the Bull Durham. No, but my mom was a fan of Ryan Sandberg. I don't know. You know, it was a different time. My dad was out of town on business a lot. Maybe Ryan Sandberg was a fan of my mom. I don't know. I just know I would have wished that in 84, if it wasn't going to be the Mets, who, you know, Doc Gooden was awesome that year. I would have liked to have seen the Cubs actually go on, and maybe they could have put a stop to Detroit that year and a stop to Jack Morris, so we would not have had to go on and have Jack Morris main event at the Osaka Edeon Arena against Kaito Kiyomiya. But this is where they're at, and again, it's like I mentioned with Jake Lee, they obviously like Jack Morris a lot. He's one of those guys that, you know, like, why am I brain locking on the cowboy? Oh, no. Oh, man.
Again, wrong.
Brain Wait, cancer. Oh, no.
Oh, Joe Doring. I thought you were talking Doring. Dallas I'm Cowboys. Sorry. I'm like, the only thing I'm going to know less about than the Royal Rumble is NFL.
No, not Cowboy Ron Bass either. But no, you know, when he's going to be one of those guys that, I think from the outside, people are always going to be baffled at, like, Jack Morris. But I do see a little of what they see in him. And this,
he's
like,
fine.
And like you mentioned, this is going to be a great referendum on how hot Kiyomiya is right now in short order after everything that's taken place and how hot he is going into that match. And we'll see what kind of buzz they get out of it. So that is going to be very interesting. I love seeing Dralistico on this show against Tsuchi Kotoge. I love, love, love seeing that. And again, we'll see moving forward here where they go. I could see Kitamiya and Inaba actually winning the tag titles because I'm not sure what more you can do with Kojima and Sugiura as a team. You know, taking the belts off of them but keeping them together would be cool. I'd like to see what happens with Dr. Wagner Jr., you know, with Dr. Wagner Jr., because I like him a lot, and, you know, the national title reign, he's had a couple of defenses now. I'd like to see, and I would assume that he's going to defeat Soya. I'd like to see what they have planned for him, if they got a signature feud or something set for him, because I'd like to see something there because I do like his presence.
Yeah, I've warmed to him. I maybe not as high as you are on him, but I don't. I mean, again, if it's him or some of the other guys that could be getting pushes in current Noah, I'll take that. We should, because we are about probably close to an hour and 45 minutes in the show. I guess at least an hour 40. Let's look at in brief the Keiji Muto Grand Final. Last Love Holdout Tokyo Dome event that now has a full official card for February 21st on pay-per-view. Abema pay-per-view in Japan. I believe it's going to be a Fight TV pay-per-view in the U.S., if I'm not mistaken. There are 11 matches, three of which are listed as bonus tracks of sorts, dark matches that will be shown. It opens with just a Noah match of sorts. Masa Kitamiya and Daiki Inaba taking on Yoshiki Inamura and Yasutaku Yano. Then we get into the interesting stuff as Tokyo Joshi Pro does have an offer match here. They do have a presence here, which they didn't on the Muta final. Just put a pin in that. But it's Yuka Sakazaki, Miyu Yamashita, Shoko Nakajima, and Rika Tatsumi taking on Mizuki Maki Ito, Miyu Watanabe, and Yuki Arai, which I guess, if nothing else, it's interesting but not surprising. It shows how, you know, how key of a piece Yuki Arai has become for Tokyo Joshi Pro and all of her outside fanfare, how well she's transitioned into being a pro wrestler, that she would be one of the eight featured wrestlers, you know, in a match like this.
I like this. You know, it feels like Tony Khan before an AEW pay-per-view where he stacks 0 hour or whatever it's called.
Yeah, what is the Eddie Kingston Dream Match Tour on pay-per-view pre-shows?
Yes.
I'm for it.
And to me, You know, you have the offer match. I mean, you could have put a different TJP match on this show. But I'm okay with what this is. It's a showcase.
Yeah, it's a showcase of their biggest stars.
Exactly. With the names that are on there and having it on the pre-show, this is one of those examples that with this on the pre-show, you're going to have a lot more time. So I like this entire pre-show, everything that's set up for it, you know, the eight matches that they have set to. But, you know, I haven't seen anybody. Again, my radar over the last couple of weeks has not been, you know, isolated on TJP fans or anything like that. But hopefully they're not complaining about the fact that it is this type of match on the pre-show as opposed to something on the main show.
No, I mean, I haven't really seen anything. Honestly, I haven't seen too many complaints about this show as a whole. And obviously, we're you know, a month out. We'll do a much bigger preview of it as we get closer. But, like, the lineup for this show is basically everything I want a major Japanese professional wrestling show to be and what we don't get often enough and we haven't had often enough, you know, in this last decade or so outside of when there's a natural disaster and everyone comes together. Like, this is, you know, you look at, you've got... Now, the match three, or I guess the third bonus track, the third pre-show match, Sugiura, Kojima, and Thatcher against GLG, Jack Lee, Jack Morris, or excuse me, Jake Lee, Jack Morris, and Anthony Green. I mean, it'll be fun. It'll be a good match, but it's just a Noah match. Then, you know, we've got Eita, Hayata, Chris Ridgeway, and Daga coming into Noah to take on Atsushi Kotoge, Yohei, Seki Yoshioka, Alejandro, and Junta Miyawaki. Be good action, but, like, it's for the most part something you would see on a Noah show. Then we start to get into kind of the business end of the card of this feeling like an all-star, almost like a weekly pro show, even though it's not. We've got Mao, Shunma Katsumata, Yuki Ueno, and Toi Kojima, is one of the more impressive young wrestlers in DDT, taking on Tetsuya Endo, Hideki Okatani, Yuya Kuroku, another of the impressive young wrestlers in DDT, and Takeshi Masada. So you've got DDT presence here. That makes it feel like a cyber fight show.
Yeah, one of the most interesting matches on here by far, by leaps and bounds to me.
Yeah, what, the DDT match?
Yeah.
Would you say just in terms of how much the future of the promotion is being highlighted on such a big show like this?
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the other names you have on there, I look at some of those matches, and I'm not saying I know exactly when we're going to get or anything like that, but my interest level for the DDT match because of the names that are involved in there, you know, yeah, I'm very interested in seeing, you know, who stands out and who looks good and how exactly this whole thing plays.
Well, it's going to, as far as standing out, I think that's the key word. Like, this will stand out as being different from most everything else on the show. We then have Dragon Gate versus Noah. This is one of the matches I'm most looking forward to on the show. Shun Skywalker, Kai, and Diamante taking on Naomichi Marufuji, Iho de Dr. Wagner Jr., and Ninja Mac. Ninja Mac getting a big opportunity here on a show that, while there are wrestlers from a ton of different promotions, you know, we're not seeing a ton of foreigners. I guess really the only foreigners on this show are Noah-related foreigners, and he fits into that bill.
He's so great, and he's perfect for over there, and great. And him and Skywalker as
that's
Super
what
Balls.
I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tremendous. So yay to all of that.
The next match, this might be outside of Kiyomiya and Okada. I think this is the thing I'm most looking forward to on this show. And one of the things of everything that's been announced so far for 2023, one of the things I'm looking forward to the most, it's All Japan versus Noah. It's Kento Miyahara, Suwama, and Yuma Aoyagi taking on Kenno, Katsuhiko Nakajima, and Manabu Soya. What I'm most looking forward to is seeing the Kensuke office / Diamond Ring reuniting on opposite sides of the ring between Kento Miyahara and Katsuhiko Nakajima. That is a long time coming, and we have not really seen this version of Kento Miyahara, the ace of All Japan, interact that much, if at all, with this version of killer Katsuhiko Nakajima. I really hope somehow, some way, we eventually maybe get a singles match out of this as well. Send Nakajima to the Champion Carnival. Noah's not doing anything with him. They're terrified of him injuring all their guys. Send him off to All Japan. They don't have to worry about who he injures.
Well, he knocked out Endo last year, as well as, crushing Okada's jaw and Kotoge slapping the, ever loving
knocking him out of
him.
That press conference.
Oh Jesus, yeah. I mean, maybe they just they're too afraid to have him mixed up there in the mix there with Miyahara. But yeah, you're exactly right for everything that you just said. We have not seen that interaction since he's been at the top of the All Japan food chain. So I like this match because, again, Suwama involved with Soya. And again, you put Suwama in anything, he's like human jello. He just kind of fits. And, Aoyagi and Kenno being in there. So, yeah, the win across the board when it comes to that match, it's going to be good. Again, I would be shocked if it's not.
I want to see, just from a personality and character standpoint, Yuma Aoyagi and Kenno opposite of each other, maybe even more ridiculous of a visual in terms of facial expressions and interactions than even what we saw with Naito and Kenno. While we're mentioning All Japan, we're not going to have enough time to talk about it because there's just so much news going on. We're not going to talk about it in detail. But if you have not had a chance to watch the All Japan double tag team title match from just a couple days ago that featured Yuma Aoyagi and Naoya Nomura taking on Tsukuya Nomura and Kento Miyahara, you need to watch that ASAP. Incredible tag team match. It's going to be very difficult for any tag team match in 2023 to beat that. Just nonstop action, and to see the non-Nomura brothers face off was awesome. Or I should say the Nomura non-brothers face off was awesome. Naoya Nomura is, to me, the most underrated wrestler in the world. He just, when he gets going, those left-right forearms, just the whole deal. He's fantastic. You have Yuma Aoyagi and Kento Miyahara working toward their Triple Crown match that's coming up. I believe on February 4th. So great stuff there. Make sure to check that out. The fifth proper match on the Tokyo Dome Keiji Muto retirement show. This feels like this should be a little bit earlier on the show, but I guess when you're the booker or one of the bookers of the company putting this on the show, your supposed retirement match can be pretty high up on the card. It's Nosawa and Masada reprising their Tokyo Gurantai team, taking on Taiji Ishimori and Gato.
Well, I can see this being the official, like, okay, here's your last chance to go to the bathroom. Here's your last chance to do what you need to do. We're going to do old man wackiness. We're going to do the nostalgia stuff. We're going to play to your parents here and do that because we got Bang 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 coming up here to close the show. So I guess I get that, especially because, it's going to be coming after that great DDT match, or at least what's on paper probably is going to be the Dragon Gate versus Noah and then All Japan versus Noah matches. So I guess I kind of get where that whole thing is placed on there as we go into Amakusa against Hiromu Takahashi.
Yep, the Tokyo Tornado match is what this is being called. That's the subhead for it. But yes, Amakusa versus Hiromu Takahashi.
By the way, Takahashi's out. What was he dressed? What kind of bug was he?
He was a Hiromu Takahashi bug. He was an alien of some sort. His entrance gear for that New Japan versus Noah show.
Wow.
And the match against Ohara was something else.
He's a star, though. Man.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Here, as of now, both men hold the respective junior titles of their promotions. This is listed as a non-title match so far. I would assume it will be non-title, but we'll see, where we are come February 21st. That leads into the semi-main event, the co-main event, whatever you want to call it. Talked about it at length earlier. We'll talk about it a lot more in the weeks to come. Kaito Kiyomiya shining through as he takes on Kazuchika Okada. Again, the respective heavyweight champions of both promotions. We'll see if both, one, or neither of them have the belts by the time this match gets around. As we talked about earlier, how they work their way to this match with Okada in storyline saying, nope, I'm not showing up. So I think as we talked about earlier in detail, we're both very excited about that, which then leads into Pro Wrestling Last Love. It's not Keiji Muto against Dwayne Johnson, as Keiji Muto apparently wanted and was not able to get. It is Keiji Muto, Tetsuya Naito, and what is billed as Keiji Muto's retirement match. I was amused by Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton just completely laughing off the idea that this is actually Keiichi Muto's retirement match on commentary. While I agree with him, I thought it was an interesting choice. I guess it's not their job to sell this pay-per-view, this show. It's not a New Japan show, but it was just, I was bemused by their commentary, I will say.
Yes, and, you know, everybody has kind of picked up on that and has had their jokes about Keiichi Muto, but I think this is probably going to be it, unless...
It's going to be the last singles match he does. I can't fathom. Maybe he comes back and does some wacky 10-man tag a couple years from now, but I can't imagine this dude doing a main event singles match, you know, anytime soon. Granted, before this whole run in Noah started, we all thought he was so completely broken down that there was no chance of him doing anything other than like nostalgia 6 or 8-man tags like he had been doing. And here we are.
Well, we haven't had an American Muta bye-bye yet, have we? And if Sting, you know, decides, and he probably will have his last match this year, could we see Muta back out? But look, he shouldn't. For all the reasons that we've already talked about with him being as broken down as he is and all that sort of stuff. And, I mean, again, how many times are you going to come back even to be a special occasion on Sting or something like that? This should be it. And this should be all over with. And Naito's an interesting choice. I like it. You know, it makes sense. It's going to be a good match. Naito's going to do everything for him, and, you know, there's enough charisma between those two guys that I don't know how it'll go. I would assume that Naito gets the victory, but it is Keiichi Muto, so you know what? If you want to have him go out with a shining wizard and that's what it is, then that's what it is. I'm not going to complain no matter how they decide to play it.
Can you imagine the uproar if and when Muto defeats Naito? The combination of people like us who have been frustrated about Keiichi Muto, like, you know, getting wins over the likes of Kaito Kiyomiya, and then the Naito army. Can you imagine the reaction? It will be something if Keiichi Muto wins, but it's his retirement match. Who cares? If he wins, he wins. It doesn't matter at this point. Whatever damage is going to be done has been long done by now.
Those people will be really upset because then it's going to be like, well, Nakamura then is in by wrestling math one step above Naito or something like that as well too. And I think Naito is going to get the victory here, but if you, again, it's because it is Naito and Muta, and I think everybody's had their joke about how little Muta has been. You know, for a guy that's been getting paid big money, and granted, I'm sure this shit hurts a lot, which has got something to do with his attitude afterwards. But look at what his attitude's been after a lot of these matches. So, you know, if this is what it is, most people have pointed out that it's just Muto being Muto. So if he does get the win over Naito, I think a lot of people are just going to roll their eyes and roll their shoulders and shrug and go, well, that's Keiichi Muto. He went out like he's been.
Yeah. Pretty much. I think that's exactly what it'll be. One other thing quickly, because we're going to close out the show. Just want to touch on Stardom. It has, in the realm of like them having multiple pay-per-views in a short period of time, it's been a relatively slow couple of weeks. Some good stuff throughout the early stages of the Triangle Derby tournament. If you're looking for something to watch for free, I believe it still is up for free, the New Blood 7 show on Stardom's YouTube channel that had the first round of the New Blood Tag Team Tournament, which actually had some really good stuff on it. Starlight Kid and Karma against Sia Brookside and Mariah May was very fun. A quick shout out, we talk about on this show, wrestlers that go to Stardom and surprise/improve. Mariah May, I did not know much about and didn't go into watching her in this tournament with, I wasn't like particularly thinking, oh, we're going to see some really good matches. She's been fantastic in the team with Sia Brookside. She's been the star of that team. She does a lot of little things really well, and I've been very impressed with her. And then the main event of that show, Mirai and Tomoka Inaba, it's kind of like the Adam and Mike superpower team uniting. They had a really, really good match against Saya Iida and Hanan. Mirai getting the win over Iida there. So that tournament will continue. They have a big show in March, a New Blood premium show, I believe, at the new Yokohama Arena. you know, a couple thousand people capacity. So the biggest new blood show they've had. And then coming up February 4th, the next Stardom pay-per-view on the schedule, at least as I have it. I am hyped for this show, Mike. There's a Triangle Derby match on this show. There's Shuri, Ami Surei, and Konami teaming up to take on Hayashishida, Izumi, and Lady C. Chihiro Hashimoto against Mirai should be awesome. There's a great angle with Hashimoto and Shuri at the last Cork and Hall show where they were looking to set up their match, and Mirai just stepped in and said, I'm taking that match. I want that. We also have the Belt Challenge Rights Naniwa Roulette Singles Elimination Match, a wacky match with even wackier rules that Mayu Iwatani attempted to lay out on a recent show to much consternation and amusement from other wrestlers. It is Mayu Iwatani versus Momo Kogo versus Natsuko Tora versus Saki Kashima versus Mai Sakurai versus Thekla versus Tam Nakano versus Natsupoi versus Mina Shirakawa versus Mariah May versus Waka Tsukiyama versus Miyu Amasaki versus Yuna Mizunori versus Momoka Hanazono versus X. My name is not Excalibur.
That sounds like one of those matches that they would book on New Year's Eve to make sure that they had enough time to actually cross into midnight.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. But that will all result in the winner being able to get, I believe, a title shot of their choosing. We then have the three big matches on the show. Goddesses of Stardom tag team titles, Nanai Takahashi and Yu, 7-Up, the champions, defending against Micah and Himeka. This is going to be... if you can call if you can call a women's match a hoss fight, this is going to be that, a slobber knocker, 100%. I'd love to see Micah and Himeka win, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I didn't think you're going to stop right there. I don't think they will either, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that just because, again, the 7-Up team has grown on me, and I'm a big fan of Micah and Himeka, so, you know, them slamming into each other, I have no complaints.
It will be good stuff. Also, the Wonder of Stardom title as Saya Kamatani continues to go deeper and deeper into her reign and tie records and break records. She is wrestling someone who has history with that belt as well. It is Saya Kamatani defending. It's Momo Watanabe. I'm always down for Momo getting a big singles match, being in a title opportunity, title match sort of situation. I do not expect her to be the one to end Saya Kamatani's reign, though I still... in my head, at least, think that is going to be reserved for maybe for the likes of Natsupoi down the line. I don't know. But either way, this should be really good. And then World of Stardom title, Julia Suzu Suzuki. This is in Edeon Arena, another major show. We've talked a lot about big shows happening in that arena in Osaka. Julia and Suzu Suzuki. The only complaint I have is that I wish this match was happening later in Julia's title reign, because I have a hard time believing Suzu Suzuki is going to end Julia's reign this early, but goddamn, this is going to be awesome.
I like it because it's a match that I don't think Julia's got any shot of losing. I don't care about Suzuki winning at this point in her career. She's not even full-time there. There would be no reason to change this belt, but it's a great feather in her cap. At this point in her career, the fact that she's even going to be in it, it gets a win against a pseudo-outsider out of the way for Julia right off the bat, and what's probably going to be a very physical match that's got some plunder involved, and it's got, you know, some of that more than, and again, we see it with a lot of her matches anyway, you know, going to the outside or doing some more extreme things, but you're going to be able to do that even more with Suzuki than you do with other people on the roster. So I think it's a great first one to get out of the way, and I think it's going to be, again, I think for a lot of people, it is about, especially with Stardom too, I think more than anywhere else, where it is their fans are educated and they are very much healed to the promotion. Progress matters here. We like seeing people, you know, grow inside their unit. We like seeing this person grow from 16-year-old rookie to 22-year-old this. And I think that's a perfect – Suzu Suzuki in some ways is perfect for that there, you know, as far as watching someone's progress. And I think that's how a lot of, I think, Stardom fans – to me, I theorize, you know, I do the sociology. I think a lot of them are looking at that match as, you know, her world title is going to be her standing in there and having one hell of a match and holding up her end of the deal is going to be just as, you know, it's going to be more important than her winning the title.
I think that's a really good point. I think that is, obviously a better justification than I could come up with for putting this defense where it is in Julia's reign. So I think it's totally valid. And I'm just very much looking forward to that show. I'm looking forward to seeing how they draw. You've got Stardom, New Japan, and Noah all within 8 days of each other running the same building for major shows with world title matches. So that'll be, you know, something to pay attention to, see how each of them draw in those scenarios. I think with that, we probably should head toward closing this out, Mike, unless you had anything else you want to talk
about?
My
only question is, what the hell is Raikou Dragon Pro?
Oh my God. Yeah, we have not even talked about Hiromu Takahashi's Junior Festival 22. 22, that is right. 2-2. 22 different wrestling promotions will participate in a show at Korakuen Hall that will be a New Japan World pay-per-view. So we're starting to see more and more of these events be offered on New Japan World pay-per-view, or, you know, Wrestle Universe pay-per-view, whatever it works. But we have 666, Osaka Pro, Gambare Pro, Kyushu Pro, obviously New Japan Pro Wrestling, All Japan, Big Japan, Pancrase Mission. I assume they'll be represented by Hikaru Sato, who's still, you know, he wrestles for All Japan, but lists himself as Pancrase Mission. We have Secret Base, an offshoot from the old Dragon Door days, still kicking around.
I saw Zero. That. I thought they were going to have some sort of Falcons thing. I thought it was the Secret Base on YouTube, does like the sports analytics stories and stuff. It was very confused there.
I'm more confused than you are, apparently, by that. 01, Noah, Basara, Freedoms, Mishinoku Pro. So I am dying to see, hopefully, Fujita Junior Hayato be on this show. We have, as you mentioned, Ryukyu Dragon Pro Wrestling, CMLL, DDT Pro Wrestling, Tradition, which I'm hoping means that Tatsumi Fujinami is cutting weight to wrestle one more time as a junior heavyweight. That would be something. Dragon Gate, Glate, JTO, and 2AEW. So just about every promotion you can think of in Japan that offers men's junior heavyweight wrestling of any kind, plus CMLL on this show. Kind of surprised that there's no AEW ROH involvement. Maybe that will get added at some point. But yeah, I believe it's said that it's going to be more than 50 wrestlers representing more than 20 promotions at Korakuen Hall on March 1st, 2023.
No Rev Pro either. But then again, This is being advertised as a Hiromu Takahashi card, and obviously he's got some funding behind him, and New Japan's going to probably, you know, help foot the bill for production and all that sort of stuff, because they'll be getting it back off of offering it through New Japan World as a pay-per-view and all that sort of stuff. But I'm sure a lot of discounts are being, you know, offered up through Takahashi's friends, and hey, look at the success of the, you know, Taichi Taka Despi shows and some of the buzz that's gotten. And I'm all for this. You know, it's like the Super J Cup coming back for Jersey Championship Wrestling in February. They got a good lineup going. You know, I like seeing that. I like seeing, even though I'm not tuned into it heavy every year, but Bola, that sort of thing. I don't know what the ultimate plan is going to be here for this all, you know, for this show, if it's going to truly be able to be a yearly thing, but I love this idea, because you need to me, again, one of the things about having relationships with companies and about having people like Liger, again, and if Rome was going to be the new Liger, one of the things Liger would do is go out, scout talent, go out, pick people that he would want to work with, go out and find people that he think could be beneficial to New Japan. Man, well, that would be nice if Hiromu wants to do that every year. So it's very, very interesting to see exactly what this show actually is, if there's a mini tournament involved, if it's all showcase matches. It, you know, again, a lot of promotions. Will be interesting to see exactly how everything shakes out.
Well, and it's another event, kind of the theme of this podcast this week. You talk about the New Japan versus Noah show that just took place, the Keiji Muto retirement show, which has a ton of different promotions involved. And now this, it's the type of stuff on a scale that we haven't seen in Japanese wrestling in quite a while. And so, yeah, bring more stuff like this on. Keep it coming. Very much excited.
We had Michinoku Pro and any interaction with Just Tap Out since the split?
You mean with 2AW and
or
Just 2AW, Tap Out?
Yeah.
That's a really good point as well. I would imagine they probably will not be in matches against each other. imagine you probably won't see like Taka Michinoku in particular wrestling against anyone from 2AW, but who knows? It's 2023. Again,
anything can happen.
We had Naomichi Marufuji chopping Sting in a real wrestling ring. This was not Fire Pro or Total Extreme Warfare. This was actual real life professional wrestling. So you never know. Anything can happen. Mike, quickly, another place where anything can happen is the Wrestling at Random podcast that I do with Jeremy Deamer each and every week. WrestlingAtRandom.com or search Wrestling at Random wherever you get your podcasts, including many of the places you are listening to this podcast right now. Random shows, it is true. Every week, truly random shows we watch, we review, we talk about. We do even more shows in addition to the free shows at WrestlingAtRandom.com or on your podcatcher of choice. We also do additional shows at patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom if you want to support the show there. In addition, at some point, Three Count Fall will be coming back. I'm not making any promises. It will just come back when it comes back. Anything that you have that you want to talk about, Mike, I know you have a few things that we all know and love to remind everyone about.
Yes, yes. You know, hey, if you got a couple extra bucks that you want to throw around and you don't want to throw it around to Adam, or you already have thrown around to Adam and want to throw it around to me, I would accept it over at the patreon.com/MidAtlantic Podcast. The Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast is pretty much moved to Patreon only right now, as I do a lot of special projects over there. I did Grit and Glory, the history of tag team wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions, going back to the early days of the promotion, back to the 30s, and when wrestling, tag team wrestling became big there. It takes you all the way up to Steamboat and Youngblood, and them going into their battles with Slaughter and Cronoodle. I'm currently working on a piece about Wahoo McDaniel's heel turn in 1984. Wahoo McDaniel, in his quest to make the American Indian a first-class citizen, his team with Tully Blanchard, his feud with Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. It is an incredibly fun story, and I have not only a written portion, but I also have an audio component as well, too, with tons of clips going back into the early 70s. I'll take you to Florida, Georgia, Mid-Atlantic, and tell the story of Wahoo McDaniel, him getting screwed by the NWA, him getting screwed out of the United States Championship, and how he felt that there was a conspiracy against him. It is really, I've worked really hard on this. I got people overlooking it right now just to make sure everything is tight with it, but that is going to be coming very soon. I'm really, really fired up about that. So patreon.com/MidAtlanticPodcast. You can also find it on Twitter at Mid-Atlantic Pod, and then, of course, the wrestling news every single day except for that day on Sunday where I accidentally somehow, some way, left edits and didn't save edits in the middle of the show. It was bookended. The first part of the show was fine. The last part was fine. The other part I left in, you know, some behind-the-scenes screw-ups is what I did. You know, and after 160-something straight shows, whatever it's been, I was due for one of those, but you know what? It was a long week, and now I was happy it was over with. But every single day, the wrestling news into your RSS feeds, into your ears, and into your hearts. All of the news that you need from professional wrestling between 6 and about 16 minutes long every single day. It'll get you to your favorite podcast, which will talk more in depth about things where there's no conjecture, there's no bias, there's no rumors, there's no nonsense. It's just the wrestling news. So find that on Twitter, Wrestling News AV. You can find it on Facebook, Wrestling News AV. Find it on YouTube, the same way you can Mid-Atlantic Pod. Wrestling by through the Arcadian Vanguard. And if you got one of your gimmick devices, you can just set an alert for the Wrestling News to play. Just say the Wrestling News Podcast, and there you go.
Yes, and I as always, I second Mike's call for people to check that out. It would blow me away, really, if anyone who's listening to this podcast isn't already making that part of their daily listening diets. If they aren't, you should. It is the best way to get up to date in a quick, easy way on pro wrestling. Mike and the whole crew there does a fantastic job. Mike, just before closing it out, and I know everyone has talked about this. I know you've talked about it at length on the Wrestling News and at Wrestling Observer Live as well, but would be remiss if we did not mention the passing of Jay Briscoe here on this show. It's just bizarre to even be saying that sentence, you know, on this podcast or anywhere else. And I mean, I don't know what else I can add to anyone else who has actually known him is already added, but just a tremendously sad situation. And a guy that, as a pro wrestler, you know, we talk about so many different things. I've seen so many people talk about his career. One of the things that I don't think has been talked about enough, and maybe, you know, it's something we can talk about at a later date when this is sort of, you know, had more time to process everything, but he and his brother don't get enough credit for how easily they transitioned to wrestling in Japan when they went to Japan, how effortlessly they got over, and, you know, whether it be the matches they had for the GHC junior tag titles in Pro Wrestling Noah, or years later, their you know, handful of appearances in New Japan. Whenever I watched them in Japan, they were guys that I thought, man, if the timing was right and a promotion like that brought them in full time or near full time, they would be, you know, top foreign stars. So, you know, at a time like this, wrestling is completely meaningless, but you know, it still is something that, as I was reflecting on his career, I was thinking, man, like, as much as the little bit we got to see of he and his brother in Japan, I certainly would have loved to have seen, you know, a lot more.
Well, yeah, and it gives you, at a time like this, everything rushes back, and you really start to think from a professional point of view, this is one of the greatest tag teams of all time.
Oh, without a doubt. The longevity?
Yeah, and the thing is, they started so young. That's the one thing that, you know, gets thrown around a lot about naturals and naturals for the business, and it's like, they were naturals. Like, some athletes come in and play football and wrestle just like they did in school, but they come in, and even if they come in early in their careers, they never quite get it, or there's always something that's a little off, or no, that's not the case. One thing that was forgotten about, I think, for a long time, because they are so synonymous with each other, is the fact that Jay's singles run and his saving the company, but, you know, after Elgin and all that, you know, when he came back and had his own belt and coming back and having the head-to-head with Lethal, and I'm a big Lethal fan, obviously you're not, but, you know, that feud was perfect and a perfect dynamic of two guys going back at each other. And an incredible team. Again, they, and as real as the day is long, for good and for bad, and, you know, being from Sussex County, I can tell you, you know, they were what they were. And, you know, one of the things that was always very frustrating for me and for a lot of people is that they were also a great redemption story. I said that on Twitter one time and got lit up for it about people jumping on me. And it's like, because you don't know. You don't know how much and how often he's called himself a dumb son of a bitch and said, man, fucked up and all that sort of stuff, and wanted to learn and did learn. And now everybody's finding out through Ian Riccaboni and through other people, you know, it's like, you know, nobody ever stopped and thought, you know, Effie's working with him, and, you know, there's other people working with them. African-Americans have been down to the farm, wrestlers, you know, they've made the trip down to the farm before. You know, they were guys who never left this peninsula, really, even though you saw them in Ring of Honor, even though you would think, oh, yeah, I saw these guys wrestle in Ring of Honor in the early aughts and in the mid-2000s. They should be world travelers. And they were country guys from the family farm that never left the peninsula and really didn't have any idea on how heavy their words would be, especially Jay. And he had to pay for that. And he didn't mean that shit, you know? He, you know, not in the way that it ended up coming off. And I understand why people always wanted to hold that against him. I get that from some people, but was very frustrating to get back to the point I was trying to make was that it took this for people to actually believe that he changed. And it took this for people to stop drowning out a lot of people who were saying Mark never did anything wrong. His problem was, you know, he was loyal to his brother. And, you know, again, no, in this era, nobody, I guess, should deserve some credit for this, but I'm going to give, you know, people credit for those who don't continue to bitch and moan and whine and have their hand out and do too much to try to say I'm sorry about stuff. He did what he could do, and then, you know, there's only so much you can say, and there's only so many times you can say it, you know, and you have to move on, and you have to keep it moving, and that's what he did, you know. He ate his shit. And moved on from it. And Mark stood by his side. And I think that deserves a lot of, I think you deserve credit there. And I can understand why people disagree with me on this and all that sort of stuff. And I might be too close to it because, Christ, you know, I'd have to go out with these redneck girls and their redneck friends and they'd want to go out to Station 7. And I think this night is going to suck, you know, and then because it's all this country and it's all this because, again, where they're at, it's a lot of country and all that stuff. And damned if Jay wasn't there, you know, or going to Ocean City, you know, after his shoulder was busted up, you know, and then they're running a show. I can't even remember what the main event was. This was at the time that Cody and Damian Sandow were teaming together and damned, you know, and, you know, the whole clan, of course, is there. But, you know, catch Jay, you know, at a moment and just starting to talk just because, you know, he happened to be out in the concourse and I happened to be there at the same time. And that was one of the crazy thing was no matter where we would go, you know, they were always there. If it was a WWE house show, they would be there with the whole group. If it was going up to UMBC because, you know, Ring of Honor shows or to Du Burns Arena, it just every time we'd catch some member of the family at some time and then seeing them out in the wild here because, again, this area is only so big, especially out where they're at, up, you know, and it just, there was a lot of words wasted. I knew I was going to babble a lot about it. It still sucks. And, you know, it just sucks. And I wish the best for the kids and hopefully, you know, no matter what happens after tomorrow, after as we record this, after Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal, who has been down on that farm before and has been down to Laurel before, you know, I don't know what's going to happen after this, but if that's it, you know, awesome. I'm happy for Tony Khan that he pushed so hard for this. I'm happy that cooler heads have prevailed. I'm happy that bygones hopefully now are going to be bygones and we get a proper tribute to Jay Briscoe that we probably should have had last week because he was a giant. He was much more of a giant than people will ever believe, and he not only belongs in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, he belongs in the Indie Wrestling Hall of Fame with GCW. They are the epitome of where we got, you know, kids learning in their backyards. Those were the kids that helped to grow Ring of Honor. Those guys, they're the ones who helped to grow PWG. You know, they helped to do that at a time where Noah was getting popular and being known in the States because they had a tie-in with Ring of Honor, you know, and then we got to see the Briscoes go over there and we got to hear Give Me Back My Bullets played, you know, as they're on the green mat and all the growth that they had and all look, you cannot tell the story of Ring of Honor for all those years and look at all the people that have come from Ring of Honor that now fill AEW and WWE main event situations. There's always a tie into a Briscoe. There's always a tie into Jay Briscoe as you go down the line. So, well, I guess that's about all I got on that one, Adam.
Yeah, I certainly can't say any of that better. You know, Better than you did. You were certainly, you know, one of the first people, literally the first person I thought of, you know, when I saw the horrible news.
Call me Selbyville, you know, it wouldn't even be Mike, you know, because I always didn't do my introduction. Hey, you probably don't remember me, you know. I don't know, of course, it would lie or not, you know, whether it be Pop or whatever, because that's, you know, they would at least make you feel welcome like that. But, you know, of course, yeah. You know, say I'm from Selbyville, and that is, of course, that's what I would be for the rest of the night, you know, Selbyville. So it's like, you know, I remember fucking bring the beer for Laura. Laurel, a case of Sierra Nevada fall sampler that Mark was. Ooh, what's that? Chicken, that's yours. That's a gift for you. It's just now. By that point, Jay had already meandered off, was talking to other people and all that stuff. And I had a picture. It was a picture of Mark and Avery and everything. It was ooh, and he like does a little sneak away with it, and it's just like. You know, he's talking to Jay. Where'd the beer come from? Like Selbyville. I knew I liked you, Selbyville. And it was just like, he was, you know,
awesome.
It just, the voice, that's what he, that was him all the time. Again, and it's just, the best characters are the ones you just turn the dial up on, you know, and embellish just a little bit, but they're at its core, they're you. And the Briscoes are the Briscoes. So. That's how it goes. Reach for the sky.
Absolutely. I think with that, definitely let's close it out. Thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.